It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. I personally have missed being on the show the past few weeks, finally caught up on my sleep a little bit. And we are entering the offseason, which is still an interesting time in fantasy, if you know where to look. And that's why you're here. We do. So we will start with some World Series takeaways, because there was a lot of baseball, so there's a lot to talk about. We will start with World Series MVP George Springer. And I really like Springer as a player. I got a hunch he may get a little bit overrated coming in next year for a few reasons. One, just the October hype. Two, I get the feeling that there's maybe a perception he's a little younger than he is. He's going into his age 28 season. You know, because he hasn't played a lot, he's not a guy who we necessarily think of as being going into his late 20s. So I probably don't have him with a first-round grade. I've got him pretty high. Where do you have Springer right now going into a 2018 draft?
Yeah, I have him probably with a third-round grade with maybe, depending on league size, like late second-round consideration. And I'm with you maybe wanting today, the day after the World Series as we record this, to kind of pump the brakes on him for fantasy a little bit after that great World Series run. When I break down his numbers, so he hit 283 last season, which is a lot better than he had been previously doing, and I think that is sustainable. The one thing about Springer that's impressive, outside, like forget the World Series, he did cut his strikeout rate a lot this season, and that is a really impressive, sustainable improvement that he's made. So I think he could hit 280 next year, or 285 maybe even. I think the 34 homers is sustainable. Where he falls out, way out of the first round and out of the early second for me, he stole 5 bases this year in 12 attempts, so we're probably thinking 5 or so again next year. And it's hard for leadoff hitters, even ones in the American League, to get more than 80 RBI. And he got 85 this year. That's with Houston leading the majors in runs scored. So I think we need to project that in the 75 to 80 range probably next year. So, you know, you've got 3 categories right there where he's not special. I think that makes him probably a third rounder.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing is, if you wanted to look at this year and project him for 40 home runs next year, you know, I wouldn't say that's ridiculous. And the thing about that is, and the one thing, you know, that we can't know now that maybe we know if we start talking in February or March is, it wouldn't shock me if the Astros decided to go a different approach as far as where they bat him. I mean, this is, you know, he's got on-base skills. He certainly can handle himself in the leadoff spot. But, you know, if they decided, if they were to find a leadoff hitter, if they were to, you know, approach that a different way, and you told me he was hitting second or third or fourth in that lineup, then those RBI opportunities almost certainly go up. And so then maybe you're looking at a different picture. You know, and if you believe the power, if you believe 34 home runs and 140 games, which, you know, again, you project that out and you want to say that's 40, I probably might think that that's on the high end, but it's not ridiculous. And then you tell me he's batting second, third, or fourth in that lineup, you know, maybe he gets a bump. But again, I think, you know, as you know, the batting average holds him down, the steals hold him down. He's a really good player. I'm just not sure that he's not going to get a little extra boost that I'm not willing to give him next year.
Yeah, for sure. And you're right. If he was batting second or third or fourth, because that would mean hitting right with Altuve and Correa, then I think then you could say 100 RBIs, and then you could put him for sure in the second round. I mean, if he moved down to third or fourth, I would be a little concerned maybe that he'd stop stealing any bases, which would offset maybe the extra 15 or so RBIs. But I think overall, I think what's happened is the improvement with the strikeout rate, and I'll give a little credit to the postseason, has maybe just given me a little more confidence that this improvement this season wasn't a fluke, that he can really be, you know, around a 900 OPS player again next year.
There's this interesting narrative around Yu Darvish that the sort of knee-jerk is, boy, did he cost himself a lot of money with his World Series. And one, I'm not at all sure that's true, especially, you know, there were also scouts at the NLCS, and he was superb there. But two, you know, I kind of take a little more big-picture view with Darvish and the Dodgers, because at the time of the trade, this guy hadn't pitched like a 1 or really even a 2 in quite some time, and the Dodgers seemed to find something in him. Yes, the Astros hit him hard. The Astros hit everybody hard. They were the best offense in the majors. And you look at up to that point, to me, there's as much reason to be encouraged and to draw optimism from what we saw in Darvish in August, September, and the first two-thirds of October as there is to be put off by his World Series. So your question to me in the notes is, essentially, do his World Series struggles give you any pause? And my answer to that is, if they do, it doesn't. I'm not any lower on him than I was on July 1st or August 1st. And, in fact, I'm probably higher on him than I was on August 1st. I'm just maybe the slightest shade lower than I was on October 15th. But to me, the big picture with Darvish is good for his Dodger time. So I still don't know exactly where we put him. But are you with me in overall seeing the Darvish-Dodger experience as a positive and giving him a boost to his value for next year?
I don't know. I think for me it probably held steady because, to me, his postseason was very much similar to his regular season, where he had some really nice starts, some poor starts. He finished with a 3.86 ERA. His struggles against the Astros, maybe after he pitched well earlier in the postseason, and they struggled against the Astros, that may make me a little more location dependent on where he ends up signing than I would have. Like, if he had dominated the Astros, I might have come away with the takeaway of, you know, Darvish is great. No matter where he signs, he's an ace for next season. Now I have to feel like if he ended up on the wrong team in the American League in a hitter-friendly park, maybe, you know, where he's going to face a lot of good lineups, then maybe I'm a little wary. And I know that's maybe I'm putting too much stock into 2 starts in the World Series, and you never know what was going on physically and everything else when we get this late in the season. But I don't know. I'm at the point with Darvish where I would feel a lot better about him, you know, if he signed with the Braves than if he signed with the Yankees. And I know that's the case with every pitcher, but maybe even more so with him after such an up-and-down regular season this year.
I think that's completely fair. The thing I would note with him, and look, this might even give fantasy players pause. I understand that. But you know, one of the things I just wonder about is, did the guy kind of run out of gas? He hit 200 innings in the World Series. He threw 100 last year. He didn't pitch in 15. He threw 144 in 2014. You know, the guy hadn't thrown 200 innings since 13. So, to me, I do wonder, you know, is part of what happened in the World Series that he just kind of hit a wall. Now, you know, I think that's one of the things you have to consider with him. When you're talking about fantasy and when you're talking about a major league team signing him, one of the things you have to consider is what realistically can you expect as far as innings with this guy. He's thrown 200 regular season major league innings once. He has not, you know, he's topped 186 once in the last, excuse me, he's topped 150 once in the last 4 years. So, you know, I think that's a fair question. But to me, again, I just overall, you look at that 2 bad starts against 1 really good offense and 2 outstanding starts against 2 also very good offenses. Now, that's the other part of this, is that he was not in the 2 previous starts, in the division series start and the LCS start, combined 14 strikeouts, 1 walk, 8 hits, 2 runs, and 11 in the third innings. Those were against 2 really good offenses. The Diamondbacks and Cubs, especially the Cubs, the version of the Cubs that came around in October, the version of the Cubs, that the fully healthy, sort of optimized Cubs lineup, those are good teams. So, you know, again, I overall am encouraged. I still think there are very real reasons to have some hesitation on him. But I like the pitcher a lot.
If I could put one other spin on my negative aspect with Darvish, it's that those World Series starts weren't just bad, they were really, really bad. And
yep,
sometimes I mention that what separates the great pitchers from the just okay or good pitchers is the absence of the really terrible starts. And when I go through his game log from this season, that was really what hurt him. When I look back at it, you know, he has a seven runs against the Red Sox. He has a 10 runs allowed to the Marlins. He has a couple starts, one's against the Padres and one's at home when he was with the Dodgers against the Rockies, where he gives up more runs than he throws innings. Like, it was that his postseason was actually a lot like his regular season, where he has a bunch of 7-inning, 1-run, 2-run starts, and then this like really bad, disastrous start. And I'm not sure why, like, pitchers as good as Darvish typically don't have those like 7, 8, 10 run, you know, starts that seem to creep into his game this season. And I can't really pinpoint why right now.
That's definitely fair. It's definitely worth being aware of. And again, I don't have this guy as a true ace. I don't have him in that tier. I obviously don't have him in that, you know, Sale, Scherzer, Kershaw tier, but I don't have him in that next tier either. But I think I have him in the next tier after that, and I think, again, I'm closer to having him there than I was 3 months ago. You know, one topic we've kind of bounced around a good bit over the past year or so, we talked about it some with Kluber, is, you know, what do you do with a deep October run? And there were definitely some concerns about Chapman coming into this year that seemed to be justified. Do you have similar concerns about Kenley Jansen based on how heavily he was used this month?
Yeah, I think you have to. I think that with Chapman, it's so hard because I generally trust Jansen so much. Like he's like one of the staples of a lot of my teams over the last few years. He's so reliable, and this season he was as good as always. But we start looking like between the regular season and the postseason this year, he's basically around, he's over 80 innings. Like he's around 85 innings, which is a lot, and really worked hard in the World Series. I mean, I don't think I could drop him down any lower than second among relievers, but heading into the postseason, I was very much Jansen's the number one reliever for next year and Craig Kimbrell's number two. Now, based on what happened with Chapman last year, if I was set to take a reliever and they were all still on the board, I might take Kimbrell. Do you think I'm giving too much weight into that, to one, you know, kind of one case study on Chapman last season and this season?
I think that's a little of it. I also think you may be giving too much weight to one bounce back year from Kimbrell when, you know, that's the first time he's been that guy in a little while. I think to me it is something to be aware of, but it doesn't outweigh the thing you were noting, which is the steady extended stream of success from Jansen, whereas Kimbrell kind of looked like a different guy this year, and that makes me a little nervous. Even with the concern over workload, I'm a little nervous to take the guy who sort of bounced back versus the guy who's done it every year.
Yeah, and I will say that even though Jansen wasn't like incredible in the postseason, he was still quite good. I mean, eight hits in you know, about 16 innings. You know, he had a little bit of struggle in the World Series, and maybe he was wearing down a little bit. But even in the World Series, 8 2/3 innings, 3.12 ERA, .92 WHIP. Like he's not far off of, you know, what we always expect from him. I wonder as I get further away from the World Series, maybe I'll kind of settle in it and keep him as my number one reliever. But it is something weighing on my mind. It may be enough reason for me to not really, really jump on him and be willing to let one or two relievers go before I take mine. I do like having ace relievers sometimes, but maybe I'm not going to really, really push to have the first reliever off the board and make it Jansen this year in my draft.
I'd be totally fine with that. I would definitely be fine with let somebody else take that risk. I'm just not taking another reliever before
right.
I take him.
Right.
A guy that, look, I kind of feel the same on November 2nd that I did on October 2nd that I did on April 2nd, and that's Rich Hill. He is a really good pitcher who is probably not going to throw you a lot of innings and probably will maximize the innings he does throw. But again, you know, I think his circumstances are basically the same. You know, I think the thing about Hill, particularly in a place like the Dodgers, where the way they operate is throw tons of money at tons of depth so that you can withstand doing without a guy for a little while, and that means they're willing to do without a guy for a little while, means that I kind of expect another real similar year from Rich Hill where you can't have a guy who you're going to think is going to make 25 starts as your number one. But, boy, he's a real good number two. Has your perception of Rich Hill changed over the last month or the last 7 months?
I mean, not really, especially because of his age. Like, he's heading into that age 38 season. It's hard to, I mean, he made 25 starts in the regular season this year, which the only thing that's changed with me with Rich Hill is the landscape around him. So him making 25 starts in a season where so many starting pitchers dealt with injuries makes that 25 starts appear a little more valuable. Now, he didn't go deep into a lot of those games. It's only 135 and 2/3 innings, which a lot of pitchers could do in a lot less than 25 starts. But also his 3.32 ERA, his 1.09 WHIP, those look better when you're struggling to just keep your team ERA in a fantasy league under four. So I think my perception on Hill hasn't changed. My perception maybe on the pitching landscape has changed, and maybe that will move him up a few spots, but it's really hard to get too generous with someone who's going to be 38 next year and is hardly a workhorse. So I think a smart projection for Hill next year is probably another 130 innings or so, and hope that the Dodgers manage his workload, but that he doesn't miss a really long stretch of time at any point.
Do you think Ken Giles saves 30 games next year?
Yeah, I think I do. Well, okay, I don't, because I probably shouldn't. Other than the real ace closers, you should just play the odds and take them to not save 30 games next year. But I do think Ken Giles opens the season as their closer next year, and I everything looking at his skills prior to the end of the prior to the postseason, indicates that there's no reason he can't be their closer again all next season. Now, that doesn't get into the psychology of everything that's happened to him in the past month and how he's going to be and how his manager is going to view him going into next year. But, I mean, they won the World Series. All's well that ends well. If he comes back, you know, and he's fully healthy and looks great in spring training, I don't see why he isn't their opening day closer and why he can't post another 2-something ERA this year. Do you think I'm not giving enough credit to maybe the damage that was done this month or last month?
No, I think you hit on the key, which is that they won.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do. I think it's, you know, they have some things they kind of have to address. And I think that they probably would like to be able to say, this is our guy, we're good, and that's a problem we don't have to worry about. So I think if his struggles had cost them a World Series title, I would look at it differently, but I think you hit on the key, which is they won.
Yeah, and now the Astros can go into next season saying, you know what, we won, and Ken ran out of gas a little bit at the end, you know, but he was a good closer for us all season, and he, you know, his velocity is great in spring training, and we're fine. So I think I'm basically of the mindset of, if the Astros don't go out and sign a real established closer in the offseason, which I'm not expecting them to do, if they did that, it would change everything. But if they don't do that, then I don't see why he can't get 30 saves again next year. And he may be a draft day bargain where people are turned off by what happened in October, and then he slides further than he should.
One last World Series, in this case World Series hero, Justin Verlander. Again, a topic we've talked a lot about. He has got a lot of miles this year, a lot of miles on his arm total. He was also absolutely brilliant after the trade. To me, he is one of the hardest guys to get a read on going into next season for a wide variety of reasons, but most simply, his up-and-down performance. I don't know what pitcher Justin Verlander is. I would not be, even as good as he was down the stretch, even as good as he was in the postseason, I do not want Justin Verlander as my number one in the mixed league. I think I like him as a two, but I still think he's kind of a high variance two. Do you have any more read on him than I do? Because I just kind of find him perplexing.
Yeah, I'm going to say I'll say this. If you don't want him as your one, I don't think you'll have him on any teams next year, because I think somebody in all of your drafts will look at what he did, first of all, in 2016 when he almost won the Cy Young and some people felt he should have, and then this year with the Astros, both in the regular season and the postseason. And he really had come around with the Tigers prior to getting traded. Like, he started off poorly and then was pitching quite well for Detroit before he was traded. I think if you're going to draft him next year, you have to put him probably around the 6th, 7th, 8th pitcher off the board. There's the big four, and then probably Madison Bumgarner and a couple other names in there with him in that next tier. But I think he's in that tier because he can get you the 220-plus strikeouts. It's whether the Astros are going, after knowing what the workload that he had, and he's on a long-term contract, are they going to let him throw 220 innings next year? And can he throw 220 innings? But he has always been someone who very naturally can rack up a lot of innings totals and then come back the next season and do it again. Like, we've seen a couple years with him not throwing as many innings, but not really very many. He's proven in his career to be able to do that. So I think I'm higher on him than you are, and I'm going to have him, I think, in that second tier, maybe 6th, 7th, 8th on my pitcher rankings, which means I probably will be in the hunt for him in some of my drafts.
So would you take Justin Verlander going into his age 35 season, admittedly coming off 206 innings and 219 strikeouts, but also a deep and hard-working October, over, for example, Steven Strasburg going into his age 29 season, coming off a 2.52 ERA, but 175 innings and 204 Ks.
Yeah, I think I might, and I think it's with Strasburg. I think I'll have them in this. That'll be my, like, they'll both be in that tier of pitchers, kind of from about eight, like 6, 7, 8, maybe 9 on my list. But Jake DeGrom might be in there too. But I think with Strasburg, like, I don't know, it's like expecting him to do it, but he really doesn't usually do it. Like, he typically falls short of 200 innings, whereas Verlander's consistently doing it. And rather than expect Verlander to stop doing it, I think I might just take my chances that he can do it for at least one more year, rather than expect Strasburg to do something that he's rarely done before. Also, Verlander being on the Astros helps his fantasy value for me, because whether the Astros lead the majors in runs scored or not next year, they should be right near the top again. This is a lineup where all the key pieces are coming back and are still under 30. So he should win plenty of games with the Astros next year. So I think I would probably take him over Strasburg. Would you, off the top of your head right now, do you think you'd lean Strasburg?
I honestly, I can't explain why. The overall number is 3.36. I know he had a good ERA overall. But I have Verlander pretty low in that tier of guys, in that Strasburg, Zach Greinke, that kind of, I would have a hard time taking him as you say, 6, 7, 8 starter in a mixed league. So I am probably not going to have Justin Verlander next year.
Yeah, and those choices are going to be huge choices next year, because we know that even though that pitcher's not your first round pick, that pitcher is as important to your season as maybe anyone you pick in your draft, because you're going to have 6, maybe 7 starting pitchers in your lineup, and that ace is going to be really important. So that choice, Strasburg or Verlander or Bumgarner or DeGrom or Chris Archer, like, that choice is going to make or break a lot of teams next year.
So let's say you have to make this decision right now, and in most cases you won't, but let's, for the sake of argument, say you do. Free agent starting pitchers, or potential free agent starting pitchers in one case, that we don't know where they're going to be pitching in 2018. Darvish, Tanaka, Arrieta. Who do you like the most, only knowing what we know today?
Yeah, and now I'm going to turn around after I said all those negative things about Darvish, and I'm going to take him because I'm just going to bank the 200 strikeouts, yeah, and hope that the ERA is 3.5 and not 4. I'll go further and say that if I was going to take someone second, I think I'd take Arrieta for the durability over Tanaka. I still have those lingering injury concerns about Tanaka. That being said, on a per-start basis, I'm going to guess that maybe Tanaka is better than Arrieta next year. Again, not having seen where any of them sign yet.
Yeah, I mean, we need to see where they go, but man, that 4.74 is awfully tough.
Yeah.
For me to look past when we start talking about Tanaka. Like, I saw what he did, and his upside is in a given start is as high as anybody in the game. But boy, he had a rough year. I mean, he really did. He had a rough year, and I am going to need him to be in a good environment next year to really have any significant faith in him.
If he went back to the Yankees and Arrieta went back to the Cubs, it would be Arrieta.
Yeah, for me.
Yeah.
Another trio, three Royals hitting free agency, all coming off rather nice years. Lorenzo Cain, Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer. Again, only knowing what we know today, November 2nd, who do you like most in fantasy for 2018 out of that group?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Hosmer just because he seems to be productive pretty much every year, although the production changes a little bit. Like, some years it's a little more batting average, you know, but he seems to, like, this year he hit .318, you know, and as far as, like, batted ball luck, he was pretty fortunate. So he's probably more like a .290 hitter. But I think we can probably count on .290, 25 home runs. He'll hit in the heart of someone's lineup and you know, drive in and score 90 to 100 runs. So I think I'm Hosmer, and I'm probably Kane second just because of the value of steals. And I might even have Kane in front of Hosmer. Like, I'd be really close on that. It would probably depend how my lineup was going during a draft. And I probably Moustakas third, which surprised me a little bit because he was the one who really put up the big homer total. But there are a lot of good homer totals out there for drafts, even in the middle rounds coming up this year. Where would you put them?
I'm right with you. I have a question at one. Probably Hosmer by a nose. Again, you know, knowing what we know now is that the teams looking at Eric Hosmer seem to be teams where it's going to be a pretty good place. You know, the Red Sox seem to be a team that gets mentioned with him a lot. Well, I'd like him a lot in Fenway, you know, so That is part of it. And again, I'm with you, man. Kane, you look at what he's done for 3 years running. I mean, the only difference is in 16 he only played 103 games. But 307, 287, 300, 16 homers would have been on pace for 14 or so, 15, 20, you know, again, would have had 20-ish and 26 steals. He's been really steady and, you know, just helps you in a lot of ways. He's a guy who is going to help you kind of across the board, and including, you know, even as a guy who might lead off somewhere, a guy who's going to drive in some runs. So I like him a lot. You know, again, it will depend on environment for all these guys, but knowing what we know now, I think that the question you're sort of asking is who maintains his value sort of independent of where he ends up. And I think in that regard, I might rank them Kane, Hosmer, Moustakas, but I have Moustakas third out of those guys.
Yeah, and Moustakas, I mean, he hit 25 homers in the first half, 13 in the second half. So I think it's fair to question, like, is this guy really a 38-homer player, or is he maybe more like a 30 or so homer player? And again, there's nothing wrong with being a 30-homer player, but 270, 30 homers, 80 RBIs, 70 runs is fine, but it's not special with how much offense is out there right now.
Juan Nicasio ended the year closing. Does he start 2018 closing?
I think it's quite possible that he will. I mean, it's really hard to predict bullpens right now because teams are starting to shift a little bit towards just getting a lot of good arms in their bullpen and understanding the importance of that. But I think he is someone who this season, not only did he finish the year closing, but he pitched like a closer throughout the season, as far as he didn't allow a lot of home runs and he didn't allow a lot of walks. And with those improvements, I think it's quite possible that a team that, maybe it's the Cardinals, but a team with an unsettled bullpen says, yeah, this is a guy who we can get on a reasonable contract. We're not paying a Mark Melancon type deal, on a reasonable contract, and he can be our closer. So I'm going to guess yes. What do you think?
I think that he could pitch the ninth inning for somebody next year, but I will be surprised if he gets signed to be somebody's closer, if that makes sense.
Do you think he could be in a closer competition or something like that?
I could see that, or I could just see somebody, you know, paying him to be part of their bullpen and it working out that he ends up, that he pitches well enough and then an opening comes up. But signing a guy who hasn't closed extensively to be your closer is an unusual thing. It does happen, but it's unusual and it's not something teams like to do. So we'll see, but I think that just the way the market works, I think you're more likely to see, you know, for example, I don't think Washington splashes big money this year in the bullpen market, but they might. You know, I could see a team like that signing a team that's close, signing him to be their eighth inning guy. You know, I could see the Red Sox signing him to be their eighth inning guy, that kind of thing. I could see him making significant money to be somebody's eighth-inning guy more than I can see him being signed to close somewhere. You think Jose Bautista is in somebody's starting lineup on opening day?
I'm going to hesitantly say yes, but I think that it's going to be like an odd fit because, I mean, he really 674 OPS for someone who's no longer a plus defender, you know, isn't a base stealer at all. You know, is really just a bat type player right now, and wasn't that last year. I could see it being an odd fit where he takes a 1 year deal with a lesser team that's hoping he gets off to a good start, and they flip him in the summer. So that's kind of my prediction for him, where an Oakland A's type team signs him, sticks him out in right field or at DH, and says, okay, it's a 1 year, whatever, $1 million deal, pretty reasonable. Hopefully he's hitting well in July and we can get a prospect for him. So I'm going to say yes, but in that type of, not in a great scenario. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's likely. I think somebody takes a flyer and look, part of it is, I could be wrong on this. I don't think Jose Bautista is the kind of guy who's going to, at this point, want to go and compete for a spot and be a bat off somebody's bench. I may be completely wrong on that, but he's made a lot of money and had a lot of success, and I just don't see him as the kind of guy to go and kind of do that Carlos Beltran role. I could be completely wrong on that. I don't know him personally, but, you know, I think that he will probably put starting role somewhere high on his list of priorities when he's out there looking. Tyler Chatwood, how interested are you somewhere other than Colorado?
Well, I think if he leaves Colorado, you have to be interested. So he missed all of 2015. So since he came back in 2016, he has a 2.57 ERA on the road and a 6.07 ERA at home. And I don't usually get too into home road splits except when they make a lot of sense. So for a lot of pitchers, I don't get too into road, home and road splits because I think small sample sizes and it's a little bit of a good game or a bad game here or there. But when it's a Rockies pitcher pitching really well, like this big of a difference, 3.5 runs and their ERA, and it totally lines up with what common sense would dictate, then I think it's worth looking into. So if Chatwood signs with a team, which I think he would be wise to do, if he chooses to sign with a team with more of a pitcher-friendly home park, I think that now you have to be interested. I'm not saying interested you want to draft him in a 10-team league, but interested where you would actually want to draft him in a 15-team league and would maybe even consider him in a 12. I mean, the strikeout rate I don't think will change and become really high, but maybe he's someone who could get you an ERA under 4, and that would be valuable in this day and age.
The thing that worries me when I look at him is that you look at the total picture, home and away, the last 2 years, and to me, the outlier is his road BABIP. I mean, to me, that's what jumps out is, 218 and 220 over the last 2 years. His strikeout-to-walk ratios are the same at home as they are on the road. His home runs allowed are basically, well, this year they were different, or excuse me, last year they were different, but this year basically the same. He just doesn't give up hits on contact at home on the road the last 2 years. But to me, all the rest of it looks similar. I see more likelihood that those strikeout, walk, and home run numbers lead to ugly ERAs than I do that he keeps up that road ERA somewhere else. I'd be very nervous about him.
Yeah, it's totally possible. I might be a little too optimistic on him. His total ERA the past 2 years is 4.27. What I was thinking is if he can get out of Coors and that goes down even a little bit, even down towards 4, then he has some value. One of the things, though, that he'll lose that was good about him the last couple of years, and a lot of people caught on to it this past year, was at least he was a predictable streamer, where you knew what starts you wanted to use him for and you knew which starts you definitely didn't want to use him for. You know, if he ends up just on the Marlins, now you're kind of trying to figure out whether you want to use him at home or on the road or not at all. So, and that may be a little trickier. But I do think he's an interesting pitcher just with those. You're right. He had a lot of batted ball luck on the road. But even with normal batted ball luck, maybe that 2.57 ERA is 3.87 or something like that. And then that's something that you could use in some of those deeper mixed leagues.
Carlos Gonzalez, again, if he's not in Colorado, do you have any interest?
I'm going to say if he's not in Colorado, then I'm not drafting him in a 10 or 12 team league. But if he is in Colorado, then I would draft him late and just see what happens. So to me, it's that important. Assuming that if he's not in Colorado, but he is on the Astros, now I'm back quite interested in such a good lineup and everything. But if he's not in Colorado and he's on more of a middle offense type team with a normal home park, then I think I'm not taking him in 10 or 12 team leagues. What do you think?
I think that's fair. I look, even in Colorado, I might be hesitant to take him in shallow leagues, but I got a little optimism about him. Again, it will depend on where he ends up. If he goes to Seattle, then, no. But I can see places where I'd be intrigued and think that maybe, there's been a lot on him. He's been such a focus there and such a kind of, it seems weird to say, but really kind of under a microscope in Denver. Not a lot of guys have that, but he really has. He's been a highly scrutinized guy there for a long time, and it would not surprise me if he went somewhere else, got a fresh start, if he had a nice year. So I'm intrigued, but I think that your other point is really good, which is I'd have a hard time taking him in a shallow mixed league almost no matter where he ends up, including Denver.
Yeah, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I don't think he will be back in Denver also, because they have a lot of outfield options. With Ian Desmond, they kind of need to rebuild him after a bit of a down year with them, and Gerardo Parra got back on track this year, and they obviously have Charlie Blackmon, and they have David Dahl waiting in the minors. Like, they have a lot of outfield-type options, so bringing him back doesn't, after off a down year, I don't know. I'm not in Colorado, so I don't get the vibe really with them, and maybe he's a really core part of their clubhouse, but I don't know. I do think that he is going to be on a different team, because it feels like if the Rockies want to use some money in the offseason, the outfield's not the place to put it.
And one last one, a guy who, again, it, you know, it's weird to say that a guy was under the microscope in Denver. It's similarly weird to say a guy was quietly good in New York, but C.C. Sabathia kind of was. He's been really steady the last 2 years. He's got a 381 ERA over the last 2 years and made 57 starts in that span. So, you know, for all the is he done and all the worries about his health, he's been a pretty good starting pitcher. He will be very context-dependent. You know, he goes to a place where he stays in the AL, you know, you worry a little bit. He goes to another friendly ballpark, hitter-friendly ballpark, you worry a little bit. You know, he returns to New York, you worry a little bit. But I can see him being a really intriguing option somewhere. If he goes to the NL, gets himself a friendly ballpark, I think he could be a useful mid-to-back rotation starter next year. He's a guy I might keep an eye on. Do you like Sabathia at all for next year?
Yeah, I do. I mean, yeah, I think he snuck up on me a little bit where a lot of us wrote him off. And then what happened was you saw the low ERA, which is low nowadays in the threes, but you saw the high whip, basically around 1.3 in each of the past two seasons. So you thought, okay, well, maybe he's kind of getting lucky and his FIP's a little higher than his ERA, but so this won't continue. But one thing Sabathia's been doing really well is limiting hard contact. So his average exit, now I'll throw a little StatCast data in, his average exit velocity this season was 85 miles an hour, which is one of the best of any starting pitcher in baseball. So this is someone who's been, you know, kind of keeping hitters off balance, not giving up a lot of hard contact. That's something that some pitchers can have shown they can carry through from 1 year to the next. So if he can keep doing that, he can keep that ERA around 4 or maybe a little under 4. And if he gets back to the if he gets over to the National League and a little bit of an easier park and a little bit of an easier schedule, you know, maybe he can even get it down at around 3.69 again next season. And even though the whip's not great and the strikeout rate isn't huge, I mean, I think then he's someone who, even in a mixed league, you want to use in a lot of weeks.
All right, that's Fantasy 411 for this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.